It is good to see all of y'all. I heard some extra singing, extra voices in the auditorium this morning. When I was growing up, the songs were not always something I enjoyed. I don't know why I didn't enjoy the singing as much as I do now. But as time goes on, I really enjoy it more and more as I appreciate our congregational singing together. It is something that I really, really enjoy. With that said, I have a question for you, and you could raise your hand. You don't have to raise your, maybe just a little hand raised, just kind of give you an idea of where we're at on this one. But has anybody here ever been skydiving? Anybody skydive? Joe, you ever been skydiving?
No
skydivers? All right, that was an emphatic no. Yes, okay, anybody? Okay, we've got a few. All right, any skydivers? Okay, all right. So when you were skydiving or thinking about it, or maybe you're just now kind of thinking about it since I brought it up, just the thought of skydiving, who are you putting your trust in, or what are you putting your trust in when you skydive? The ripcord, all right. Anything else? Yeah, something attached to that ripcord, I'm sure. Hopefully, right? It's not just a rope hanging out of the backpack, you know? But we kind of hope, that when we pull that cord, what's going to come out? Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, right? I mean, we did just jump out of an airplane, so we're kind of hoping that when we pull that cord, that parachute's going to come out, and it's going to kind of stop us, or at least slow us down a little bit before we, plummet to the earth. We ask questions like, is it going to work? We put our trust in that kind of stuff. Is it going to work? I mean, is it going to come open? I mean, it's not like you get to test those things beforehand, right? I mean, you don't get to do a test run and say, oh, if it works, let's go try it. And if it doesn't work, I guess you get a refund. I don't know how that works, but maybe a refund if it doesn't come open. What about the person who gave you the parachute? You ever thought about that? You put your trust in that person? I mean, you don't know that person, right? I mean, you could have cut them off in traffic a few months ago, and they see you coming and thinking, you know what? I got a special parachute for you, buddy, I mean, you never know, right? I mean, so we put our trust in the parachute. We put our trust in the person. And these things we may not think about right away, but we kind of, in a sense, put our faith in those things, believing that they will all function the way they're supposed to and work the way they were supposed to. And I thought, well, it takes a lot of faith to skydive, because you really have to put your trust and commitment. You're putting your life in the hands of a lot of different scenarios. So I looked this up because, maybe you're thinking about going skydiving and, I don't want to deter you from doing that. And so I did a little research on this, and apparently 1 in 1,000 parachutes fail. All right, so that's your statistic there. But here's the good news. Every parachute has a reserve chute, okay, which is actually better than the first one. It's not as nice of an experience, but there's a reserve, so there you go. So if your first one doesn't work, you've got a second one to back you up. And so here's kind of the numbers to think about. The catastrophic failure, I didn't want to use death rate because I thought that was a little too harsh, but the catastrophic failure of a parachute is 1 in 220,301. All right, so that's how many parachutes actually totally catastrophically fail per year. So during the year, if you're number 220,300, you might want to just stay home and not try this out. But those are the statistics. Those are the numbers. So you're more likely to get struck by lightning than to have a catastrophic failure while skydiving. Personally, I'll take the lightning, but you can make your own choice on that. I'm not telling you this to persuade you to go skydiving, but I'm telling you this to think about faith. I want us to think about faith, and I want us to think about what it means when we're putting our faith in something or putting our faith in someone. That when we put our faith in something or someone, that we're relinquishing our control, right? over ourselves sometimes. A lot of the times it's us. We are putting our life in the hands of somebody else. We're relinquishing our control of our life to somebody else. Or if it's somebody that we love, we might have to hand somebody we love over to someone else. And we relinquish control. And that's hard, isn't it? That's hard. I mean, that's just not within our nature. It's not within ourselves to hand over control to somebody else. We don't like doing that, do we? We don't like doing it ever. I mean, just for some little things, we don't like doing it. We have a hard time handing control over to somebody else and allowing them to have control, allowing their purpose and their mission to be the driving force for us, or allowing them to take our life, our fate, our future, and we put it into their hands and allow them to control the outcome. That's hard. It's hard to even think about. It's hard to even comprehend us allowing ourselves, but we do it all the time, don't we? I mean, we do it all the time. We may not think about it, and maybe if we did think about it, we wouldn't do it, but when people skydive, they do that. They relinquish control. Or even when you get in an airplane or in a car with somebody, and especially some people, you know, I mean, some people just are not very good drivers, but, you know, we give control of ourselves to somebody else, and we let go of that for just a time. And it's so hard and it's so difficult to allow ourselves to do that. And when we find ourselves in need of help, in need of somebody, we have a hard time relying on people. We have a hard time asking for help. In those moments that we have no choice, that we find ourselves in a situation where we have to, those moments can be very humbling. They can be terrifying, right? I mean, they really are. They can be terrifying in many different ways. They can be humbling, they can be terrifying, but they also can be very confusing. We can be very confused about the situation and the circumstance because we struggle with this so much. Because we just want to do it all ourselves, and we want to have control, and we want to, but to let that go and put it in the hands of somebody else is such a challenging thing to do, especially when we're putting our life into somebody else's hands. You know, often in the Gospel of Matthew, as we've been studying the Gospel of Matthew this year, Jesus commends unlikely people, mostly Gentiles, for having faith, right? For having great faith, like the Canaanite woman we studied last week, that she had great faith. And then he turns around and he looks at others, some often very close to him, and he reprimands them for having very little faith or not having any faith at all, like he does his disciples in the text that we're going to read about this morning in Matthew chapter 17. But how can we learn from these encounters? That's really where I want us to be. We're wrapping up this series this morning that we've started several weeks ago, and we want to know how can we learn, or what can we learn from these encounters that Jesus has with the Canaanite woman, or the encounter that Jesus had with the centurion in chapter 8, if you remember that scenario, the one to whom Jesus said that I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel, right? To this Canaan, or to this centurion man. And so we have these encounters with Jesus that Matthew brings forth and says, you know, take a look at this, right? I mean, you know, take a look at this man. And you be the judge, right? What would you say about this person? What would you say about that person? How would you define their faith? And then when Jesus identifies these people as having great faith, sometimes it causes us to pause for a moment and think, what makes his faith so great? What makes her faith so great in comparison to somebody else? Maybe a disciple who has left everything to follow Jesus. What makes this person's faith greater? And what's the difference? And those are the lessons that we need to learn. That's where we need to be looking. And I think the key has to do with submission. The key has to do with submission. These people that Jesus encounters are willing to relinquish control, often over a loved one. Right? That's usually the scenario. It's a child or a person that they know that is sick, a servant, and they are powerless in the situation, and they relinquish control, and they hand it to Jesus, and they say, Jesus, I cannot fix this, but you can. And I'm going to turn this over to you and step back, right, and allow you to do what only you could do, to bring about a favorable outcome, right? And Jesus looks at these people and he says, these people have great faith. So let's spend some time in Matthew chapter 17, if you will. I didn't bring my little clicker. Do y'all mind flipping the slide for me whenever I move? Thank you. All right, good deal. I forgot my little deal. All right, so let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the text here. We're not going to read everything in Matthew chapter 17, but kind of the context, it begins with Jesus in his transfiguration on the mountain. We're familiar with that story and how Jesus goes up the mountain with the three. Do you remember? And then he is transfigured before them on the mountain. And also Moses and Elijah appear there on the mountain as well. And you might think about Exodus 24. We're going to be looking at Exodus here in a little bit. But Exodus 24 has a very similar picture. Remember? Matthew uses these mountain scenes to help us see the image of what's going on in the storyline, but he also couples a lot of these with Old Testament situations as well. And so Exodus 24 is one that I believe is closely related to this text. And so we have Moses ascending the mountain in Exodus 24 with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, the three. And then we have the 70 elders who are invited up as well. So keep that picture in your mind. But look what the text says in Matthew chapter 17. It says, when they came to the crowd, a man came up to Jesus, falling on his knees before him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son. So they're coming down the mountain and this man approaches him. Because he has seizures and suffers terribly, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water. All right, so the text says that he has seizures. It literally means that he was moonstruck. In fact, your translation may actually have the term lunatic, which is where that comes from, luna being the moon. It's the idea that the ancient people believed that these seizures were brought on by the moon, that the phases of the moon would bring about these types of seizures. And so he was moonstruck. And this sickness, if you think about this sickness and how he's describing it, he's being suddenly thrown into the fire or thrown into the water, and he has no control over his body. I mean, he just has no control. It's kind of like what we would call an epileptic, you know, this idea that they lose control of themselves. And so this is what the man is dealing with his son. And could you imagine, I mean, not just how horrible that is for the son, right? But I mean, could you imagine the father in this circumstance, how he would feel helpless and how he would feel as if he could never leave his son alone, right? I mean, he can't go anywhere. He can't take an eye off of him for just a second because you don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, one minute he's standing there and the next minute he's throwing himself into a fire or throwing himself into a river. And can you think back and think about how many times this man may have rescued his son from the fire or rescued his son from the water, and how helpless he must have felt in this situation and how desperate he was in coming to Jesus and looking for help. But look at verse 16. It says that I brought him to your disciples. If you don't mind changing the slide, 16, next slide, please. It brought him to his disciples, and they could not cure him, right? So Jesus is coming down the mountain. Then again, we look at this scenario. Jesus is coming down the mountain with the three, his three disciples, Peter, James, and also John, who were with him on this mountain. But the nine stayed behind, right? So the nine had been left behind, and the three had gone up with Jesus on the mountain. And they make an attempt, because Jesus is on the mountain and they're down below, when the Father comes, they make an attempt to heal this boy, and they fail. They fail. They're not able to do it, right? They're not able to bring healing to this father and his boy. And so I want us to think about that for just a minute. And a few things that I was kind of pondering as I was reading through there and kind of thinking through this text. One thing is, what would make them think that they could? Right? I mean, what would bring these disciples to act upon their thoughts, their thought that they could heal this boy instead of waiting for Jesus? You know, why wouldn't they just sit back and say, you know what, Jesus, he's going to be back. He just went up the mountain. You know, he's coming back. Don't worry. You know, we'll just wait for him and he'll know how to deal with the situation. You know, what would make them think that they were the ones that needed to deal with this situation? Well, one thing that came to mind was the fact in Matthew chapter 10, remember that Jesus actually gave his disciples abilities to heal the sick and cast out demons and do all these things. But if you remember the text, next slide, please. If you remember the text, it said that Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every sickness, if you remember that. And maybe because they had this, because they believed this, that just maybe they would be able to do it again, right? I mean, maybe that was the scenario. Or maybe they really did have compassion for this father and they wanted to heal this boy and make him well. Maybe they had compassion and they wanted to bring about healing, and maybe that's why they tried to do it. Or what some suggest is it's possible that they wanted all the recognition themselves. Now, we're not told exactly. I think Jesus' response in here in a minute will be very revealing about their attitude, but maybe they wanted recognition. Maybe they wanted to say, you know, we're not just followers of Jesus, but we're something special too, right? I mean, we're those people. We're chosen people, and we've got powers too, and so let us heal him, right? Maybe. Right? We don't really have all the information, but maybe we kind of think about the different situations and the scenario that come first. But I want you to think back on the whole mountain scene again with Moses and the Nadab and Abihu and Aaron and all of those, the 70 elders, and think back on that whole scene. Think about Moses when he went up to the mountain and received instruction from the Lord. And if you remember what happened in Exodus 32, as Moses was up on the mountain, what were the Israelites doing down below? Were they waiting patiently for Moses to come down with instructions from the Lord so that he could lead them through the wilderness? Is that what they were doing? No. In fact, look what the text says. It says, now when the people saw that Moses delayed, there was a good span of time there, but Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, and the people assembled around Aaron and said to him, come make us a God who will go before us. For this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. Right? And so instead of waiting for Moses, instead of waiting for him to come down off the mountain with instruction from the Lord so that he could lead the people, right? They become impatient and they try to take matters into their own hand. They try to control the situation themselves, right? It's like what the disciples are doing. Instead of waiting for Jesus to come down off of the mountain, they take matters into their own hands. Look at verse 7 of Exodus 32. It says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, go down at once, for your people whom you brought up from the land of Egypt have behaved corruptly. I mean, that's kind of an understatement, but But I mean, they are turning away from the very one who has delivered them and brought them out of the land of Egypt. They are not waiting for him. They're not being patient. It's kind of like they're on a mission on their own, right? They're just saying, you know, well, now we're on our own, guys. We just got to move through this thing on our own. We don't know what happened to Moses. He went up a mountain somewhere. He hasn't come back. And now we need to move forward. We got to go. I mean, we can't stay here at this mountain forever. So instead of waiting, instead of being patient, they're going to make for themselves the golden calf. Remember, Aaron makes for them. And they're going to send that before them as their God who brought them out of Egypt. And they're going to move on without Moses and without the Lord's instruction. And then in verse 8 it says, they have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a cast metal calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed to it and said, this is your God, Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Then in verse 9, he says, then the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. So now leave me alone, that my anger may burn against them, and that I may destroy them, and I will make of you a great nation, right? See, they had enough faith, right, to make it out of Egypt, to make it this far, to follow Moses to the foot of this mountain, and that's about as far as they made it, right? I mean, that's about as much faith as they had. And it certainly didn't come without some grumbling. It didn't come without some complaining, but they at least made it this far, right? Just like the disciples, they had enough faith to follow Jesus to the foot of this mountain. They had enough faith to follow Jesus this far. But if you think about it, both Israel and the disciples, they saw amazing things at the hands of Moses and at the hands of Jesus, didn't they? They saw the sea parting, right, so that they could cross on dry land. They saw people being healed. They saw miraculous things, things that are just, you know, way out of the norm. You know, I mean, this stuff just doesn't happen every day. But even with all that they saw, they did not have enough faith to do something as simple as just wait. Because that's all they had to do, right? I mean, all they had to do was wait. All the people had to do was wait for Moses to descend off the mountain, right? All they had to do was wait for Jesus to descend off of the mountain. Instead of waiting, they take matters into their own hands, right? Look what Jesus responds in verse 17 of Matthew chapter 17. It says, and Jesus answered and said, you unbelieving and perverse generation. Now just kind of couple that with what the Lord said about the Israelites. You unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long should I put up with you? Bring them here to me. I mean, that's what they should have done in the first place, right? I mean, that's kind of full circle here. That should have been their first thought. Not, how can I fix the situation? What can I do to reconcile this? How can I help this person? But wait for Jesus. Bring him to Jesus. Jesus will take care of this. Jesus is the one who is the leader of this group, right? It's his mission. It's his purpose. It's his will. And we just need to wait for him. But they don't do that, right? They took matters into their own hands. You know, I was thinking about this. You've been a kid. Of course you've been a kid, right? Everybody here has been a kid. You know, raise your hand if you've been a kid. Okay. You know, you've ever been a kid and you were sitting in the corner somewhere and, you know, some other parent is talking to your mom and, you know it's not good because you probably didn't do something good. And so the other parent's talking to your mom and you can't hear them, but you get that look. You ever gotten that look? Right? Where mom kind of looks over at you as you're sitting in the corner and you know that, yeah, the cat's out of the bag and you know that look, right? Everybody's seen, you've probably given that look if you're a parent, all right? And so that's the kind of look that I think of when I think about Jesus and, you know, this father who was talking to, Jesus and saying, I brought my son to your disciples. They couldn't heal him. That's the look, all right? And so I don't know if Jesus ever rolled his eyes, but this would be, I can totally imagine that, the rolling of the eyes. But look at verse 19. It says, and after all of this, the whole scenario, then his disciples came to Jesus privately and asked the question, why could we not cast it out? Right? Why not? I mean, thinking back, they've done it before. Why couldn't we do it? Why couldn't we cast out this demon? Why could we not heal this man's son? Look at verse 20. It says, and he said to them, because of your meager faith, or little faith, as some translations have it, for truly I say to you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here and there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. And it seems kind of strange, right? I mean, he's reprimanding them for a little bit of faith, but yet he's talking about mustard seed size faith. Well, I think when contrasting a little faith and mustard seed faith that the little faith that the disciples had and the mustard seed size faith that they needed, that we really need to think about what Matthew has already said, especially in Matthew chapter 13. Don't you remember when he's describing the kingdom of heaven and he describes the kingdom of heaven like a mustard seed, right? That is planted in a garden and grows to be one of the biggest plants in the garden, right? And so I think that's where we need to be with our thought process. In fact, the text would say that the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in the field. And this is the smaller of all the seeds, but when it is full grown, right? What it produces, that's what's important. When it is full grown, it is larger than the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches. So it's not so much the size of the faith, right? But what that faith produces. So it's not so much the size that's in question, but it is what is being produced by their faith, right? Their faith was based on what they could do, what they could accomplish with Jesus, right? To kind of say, well, we're on this mission and Jesus is joining us, that kind of an idea. To say that, we've got this purpose, we've got this goal, we've got this plan. And with Jesus, it's going to work. With Jesus, it's going to come about. With Jesus, it's going to happen, right? That's their thinking, right? Instead of saying, what can we do through him and joining him in his mission and in his purpose and in his goals, they seem to have this mindset that Jesus is helping them with theirs. And we learn this a little bit in Matthew because we know that the disciples are very interested in the kingdom, but they have a very skewed view of what the kingdom is going to be. So they have a misunderstanding of whose mission they're actually on, right? It's kind of like saying, well, I'm on this mission and Jesus is going to help me to make it happen. As opposed to saying, I'm joining Jesus on his mission. Right? And through me, it's going to happen. He's going to bring this about. He is going to make this happen. So when Jesus sent out the 10, remember, with limited power, limited commission, cast out demons to heal people, it wasn't just to go cast out demons and heal people. That wasn't the sole purpose of their mission. But their mission was to go and to proclaim that the kingdom of heaven was what? At hand, right? That's the purpose. That's why they went. They didn't go to heal people and cast out demons. They went to go proclaim the kingdom of heaven, that the kingdom of heaven was close by, that the kingdom of heaven was at hand, right? And Jesus's disciples needed that kind of faith. They needed the kind of faith that pointed to Jesus. They needed the kind of faith that pointed to the kingdom of heaven. that determined and declared and proclaimed the coming of the Messiah, the coming of the King, the coming of the kingdom of heaven on earth as it is in heaven. And with that purpose in mind, with that goal for the cause of the kingdom of heaven, nothing will be impossible for them. Right? Nothing will be impossible if they have a mustard seed size faith. If they have a kingdom of heaven motivated and purposed faith. If they had a focus on Jesus and his work and his mission, that's the kind of faith that God is going to support. That's the kind of faith that God is going to empower. Right? God will give them the power. God will give them the strength to do it. If they submit to the King, if they submit to Jesus, if they relinquish control of their life to King Jesus and his purpose and his mission, nothing will be impossible for them to accomplish. If it is necessary, right, to part a sea to bring about the purpose and the mission of God, guess what? Yeah, the sea's going to part. Right? It's going to happen. If it is necessary to heal the sick and to raise the dead, to bring about the purpose and the mission of God, it's going to happen. Right? If it was necessary to move a mountain out of the way of God's people to bring about God's kingdom and God's mission and God's purpose, then God's going to make it happen. Right? That's the kind of faith they needed. Was one that was focused on the mission at hand and not focused on themselves, right? Because just healing the child, as good as that is and as wonderful as that would have been, was evidently more self-serving than it was kingdom-serving. And Jesus calls that little faith, right? They may have believed in Jesus, but they had the wrong mindset as to what the mission was. You know, what mission were they on? What purpose were they bringing about? So I want us to think about a few things as we bring this lesson to a close this morning. How often do we exhibit a little faith? How often do we exhibit a little bit of faith when we put our will before the Father? How often do we exhibit a little faith when we put our will before the Father? How often do we exhibit a little faith when we cannot do something as seemingly simple as wait? Just wait. It doesn't take a lot of energy, but boy, it takes a lot of patience, doesn't it? But how often are we exhibiting a little bit of faith when we cannot do something as simple as just wait? So here's our question that I want us to think about this morning, just to kind of think about and meditate on as we close this lesson out. Is your faith leading you to work with Jesus and his mission, or are you on a mission of your own? I want you to think about that, right? Is your faith a mustard seed faith? That is bringing you and leading you to follow Jesus, to relinquish your life over to Jesus, to submit to his will. Is your faith leading you to follow him and his mission? Or are you on a mission of your own? Where is your life headed? Where are you going? What have you determined? What have you purposed in your heart to do? What have you decided to do? What mission are you on? Is it self-serving? Are you trying to determine your own fate? Are you trying to determine your own life? Or are you fully and totally committed to Jesus and his mission and following him? So think about that. Is your faith leading you to work with Jesus and his mission? Or are you on a mission of your own? Are you serving people for your glory? Or are you serving people for his? Are you willing to fully submit to King Jesus? Are you willing to relinquish control over your life to Jesus, right? And that's what we do in our baptism, isn't it? Whenever you were immersed in water, when you submitted yourself to that and you died with him in baptism, you were relinquishing your life over to Jesus. You were submitting yourself to him, and you came up out of that water, yes, forgiven of your sins, but so that you can walk in newness of life. Not so that you can continue life on your own mission, but so that you can join Jesus in his mission. What kind of faith do you have? Who are you following? Whose future, whose goals, whose purpose, whose mission are you on? If there's anybody here this morning who needs the prayers of the congregation, maybe you need some encouragement. Maybe you've been at this for a while and you've kind of drifted away from the mission that God has put us on, and you're following your own desires and will. Maybe you need prayers of the congregation. Or maybe you need to begin to submit yourself to Jesus and relinquish your life over to him through baptism. And if that is your desire this morning, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.